Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to the Haunted Collection, Episode 4, October 28th, 2018. We are just a few days away from Halloween. I'm very excited. What about you? This is a really cool time of year where we get to see all the horror movie-thons on television and the movie theaters, and we get to hear our favorite ghost stories and horror stories, which, lucky for you, I'm sharing my own personal favorites right here on this podcast weekly. So be sure to tune in each week where I share my favorites that I've heard since my childhood. Some of these are really creepy urban legends, and some are reportedly true ghost stories. I've always believed urban legends themselves always come from some grain of truth. Do you agree? Well, today, in the spirit of Halloween, I'm going to share a couple of my favorite, actually three of my favorite, urban legends with you. So let's get right down to business, starting with our first story. This story is lovingly known as The Headless Roommate. Tina and Louise were sorority sisters and roommates, and they were just about as odd a couple as you can imagine. Tina was a real beauty. That alone would have made her popular, but there was more to her than that, for she had never let her obvious good looks go to her head. She was bright, cheerful, and not in the least bit conceited. Indeed, she had been blessed with an unusual degree of tact. Very smart, this girl. Even though girls who envied Tina's good looks could not help liking her, and all the boys who were firmly but ever so delicately turned down for dates did not feel crushed or personally rejected. This is just how likable this girl was. Louise was the opposite. She was rather homely. Tina always insisted that if Louise paid more attention to her appearance, or cut her hair, maybe got contact lenses, she would have been very pretty. Tina was just being loyal, for none of that would have made much difference. Louise was quite homely. She knew it and had accepted that fact. Perhaps it made her a bit gloomy, but she never said she was unhappy. She never said much of anything, really. Louise was the sort of girl who would have faded into the background under almost any circumstances, but when contrasted with her dazzling roommate, she had practically become the invisible woman. Did Louise resent always being in Tina's shadow? If she did, she never showed it. For her part, Tina was always extremely nice to Louise. She tried to bring her out of herself, though usually without much success. "Louise, you really must get out more. I mean, sitting alone in the room every weekend is so boring. It just can't be good for you. Don't you get really depressed?" But Louise would just smile and say no. She didn't really feel like going out. She had some work to do anyway, but that Tina should go out and enjoy herself. And Tina always did. No matter how sorry she felt for her stay-at-home roommate, she wasn't about to stay home herself and share that loneliness. True, they were an odd pair, but they seemed genuinely fond of one another. When Tina would come home late on a Saturday night from a party or a date, she would always find Louise waiting up for her. And Louise would listen patiently, and with no apparent envy, while Tina chatted merrily on about what had happened. That may have been the secret of their friendship. Louise was a good listener, who vicariously shared Tina's more adventurous life. This particular Saturday evening started out like so many others. Tina was going out, and Louise was staying in. But for Tina, the evening turned quickly and uncharacteristically sour. It was raining, and she was damp even before she got to her date's car. Then there was her date, a boy from a nearby college whom she barely knew. He turned out to be a disaster. He was by turns crude, morose, and mildly violent. He was slightly drunk when he picked her up, and he grew progressively drunker as the evening wore on. At the party, he created a scene in front of all of her friends, really embarrassing her. Tina's attempts to get him to take her home early were fruitless, for once Tina's famous tact failed her, this boy was too far gone. When she finally did get him back into the car, which I'm sure was not without a fight, she quite literally had to fight him off, tearing her new sweater in the process. And to top everything, the car stalled on a deserted road. Boy, what an evening this is, I guess, for poor Tina. She was not quite sure whether the car really stalled or if it was just one of his ploys. You never know with these kind of guys. It didn't matter. She wasn't going to spend another minute with the creep who had begun drunkenly weeping about how no one understood him. She stalked off in the rain to try to hitch a ride home. That took about an hour. When Tina finally got back to the sorority house, she was wet, rumpled, bruised, angry, just about as miserable as she had ever been in her generally happy life. She hoped and expected that Louise, good old dependable Louise, would still be awake so that she could recount all the details of her horrible evening, just get it all off her chest. The room lights were off when Tina entered, but a dim glow from a streetlight filtered through the window. Tina could just make out Louise's covered form in her bed. Oh, well, damn, she's gone to sleep, thought Tina. Just when I need to talk to her. Then Tina became aware that someone was humming, though she couldn't quite catch the tune. Tina was relieved. I'm glad you're not asleep yet because I really need to talk. If I don't, I think I'm going to go scream or go completely crazy. I've had the most awful evening ever. Are you lucky you didn't go out? The humming continued without pause. No reply, just that humming of that slightly familiar tune. Oh no, said Tina, you're not going to go moody on me and give me a bad time too. All right. If you don't want to listen, I won't say anything. I'm going to bed. I'm dead tired, and I'm sure I'm going to have a terrible cold by tomorrow. In the darkness, Tina threw off her wet clothes and got into her pajamas. She was usually able to fall asleep immediately, but as she climbed into bed, she knew that would not be possible tonight. She was tense and still angry, and she could still hear that irritating humming. I told you I'm tired, she shouted. Now will you please stop that noise? I need to get some sleep. There was no reply except for the relentless humming. Tina bore the noise for another minute or two. Then she could stand it no longer. All the anger and frustration of the evening burst out. Stop it! Stop it! For God's sake, stop it! She screamed. There were tears of rage streaming down her cheeks. If you don't stop that noise at once, I'll stop it for you. She jumped out of bed and switched on the light. Crossing to Louise's bed, she cast one hateful glance at the motionless form under the covers. All right, you asked for it. Tina ripped back the covers. Louise was there. At least most of her was. Her head was missing. and her pillow was covered with a red stain that had already begun to dry. Then Tina became aware that the humming continued, coming directly from behind her. Sick with fear, she turned. Standing in the corner was an enormous man wearing what looked like a gray prison uniform. In one hand, he held a huge butcher knife, and in the other hand, he gripped the hair of Louise's severed head. And he was still humming. I hope you enjoyed that story. That was always one of my favorites. Every time I heard that when I was in school, it gave me the chills. Just picturing that ending of the headless roommate. That was a popular story amongst college campuses going way back to the 60s and 70s. As you would imagine, a lot of students shared it with each other. Sometimes professors would share it with the students just to kind of warn them about being out late or not locking your doors and keeping safe. After all, college campuses are not off the scope of having crime, especially stalkers and anything else you can imagine out there in the dark. All right, so continuing our Halloween story treats, we go from the college campuses now to the big city of New York and the creepy subway tunnels that run right underneath that city. Who isn't kind of weary about taking the subway there? Of course, you know, it's a major way of getting around in New York City. It's so huge and there's so much to see and do there that sometimes you just have no other option but to use that subway to get around. During the daytime, when people are bustling to and from work, it's probably not as bad, although it still has its dangers, but at nighttime, it can be much, much worse. As we shall see in this story, we call The Man in the Middle. To the outsider, a ride on the New York subway, noisy, smelly, covered with graffiti, and filled with strange and often threatening-looking characters, can be a terrible and terrifying experience. Something to be feared, like entering an unknown jungle or sleeping in a graveyard at night. But the native New Yorker, renowned for his or her ability to put up with practically anything, takes a subway ride in stride. It's just part of everyday living, most of the time. But every once in a while, when you ride the subway at an odd hour, something out of the ordinary can happen to you. Take what happened to Barbara Lewis a few months ago. Barbara lived with her parents way out in Queens. She hated it, but she couldn't afford to live anywhere else. She worked in Manhattan as a receptionist in an advertising agency, and dreamed of someday getting a glamorous Manhattan apartment. In the meantime, she rode the subway in from Queens every morning and back out every evening. The trip took a little under an hour, if everything went right. Barbara had made the trip so often that she barely noticed the time anymore. This particular evening, however, she stayed in Manhattan to have dinner and see a show with some friends from the office. It was the sort of thing that she loved to do, but rarely did, because of the cost. On this occasion, one of the other girls had gotten some half-price tickets to a really good show, and it was an opportunity that Barbara simply could not pass up. The show was every bit as good as she thought it was going to be, and afterwards she and her friends had gone for a drink. All in all, it was a wonderful evening, except that it ended late, and Barbara still had to face that long subway ride home to Queens. Over the years, Barbara had grown quite used to the pushing and shoving of the normal rush hour crowds. The crowds were even a comfort, for there was safety in numbers. But at night, this night, the subway was different, for there were no crowds. In fact, after the subway left Manhattan and began its long run into Queens, the car in which she was sitting was nearly empty. At first, Barbara wasn't bothered, for the glow of the evening's entertainment was still with her. But after a while, the strangeness of being in a nearly deserted train started to prey on her mind. She thought of all those news stories about subway crime that she had read in the newspapers or seen on TV. Her parents were constantly warning her about being careful on the subway, and they would doubtless be up worrying about her at that very moment. Ordinarily, Barbara simply ignored such warnings, but now she was beginning to worry a bit herself. Her uneasiness turned to cold fear when three tough-looking characters got into the car in which she was sitting. The worst of the three was the man in the middle, for he was either drunk or drugged, and apparently could barely walk. He had his arms flung over his companion's shoulders, and they were practically carrying him. This dangerous-looking trio sat down on the other side of the aisle, almost directly across from Barbara. She tried to avoid looking at them, for she didn't want to attract their attention. Still, she couldn't help glancing over just to see what they were doing. To her horror, she saw that the man in the middle was staring right at her through bleary eyes. He seemed to have his eyes fixed on the purse she clutched nervously in her lap. The man's two companions noticed that she was looking at them, and they stared at her as well. Suddenly, every subway horror story that Barbara had ever heard or imagined flashed into her head. "Where are all those transit cops the mayor keeps talking about?" thought Barbara. "I'm practically alone on this train with those three." And indeed she was, for the only other passengers in the car were an elderly couple down near the other end. Even if they had wanted to help her, what could they possibly do against three strong men? The three men kept eyeing her, particularly the man in the middle, who had fixed her with a weird, drunken stare. She tried to look away, but her eyes were always drawn back in horrified fascination. At least, she didn't want them to sneak up on her. By now, she had been on the train for quite a while, and it was moving quickly. Barbara realized that there were only two more stops to her own station. But would she be safe even then? What if the three men followed her? She recalled the long walk down the platform and the long, dark climb up the stairs to street level. The station would almost certainly be deserted at this time of night, and half the lights would be out as usual. Could she possibly outrun the three thugs? Barbara cursed her high-heeled shoes. Would she be able to run at all, or would she freeze with terror the moment they got up to follow her? Feeling herself nearing the panic level, Barbara tried to calm down by thinking reassuring thoughts. She reminded herself that people rode the subway at night all the time, and only a small percentage of them were attacked. As bad as these three men looked, they were probably quite harmless. That's what she told herself, though she didn't believe a word of it. Then she saw that the old couple at the end of the car were getting up to leave. Once they were gone, she would be completely alone in the subway car with the three men. The mental barriers she had erected against panic began to crumble once again. The old couple passed her on the way to the door, and as they came close, the man said in a quiet but urgent voice, "Follow us off the train. Come, follow us." At first, Barbara didn't know that the order was meant for her, but the old man made a quick, sharp gesture with his hand toward the door. Almost mechanically, Barbara followed them. The next thing she knew, she was standing on the platform. The subway door closed, and the train pulled out, carrying the car with the dreadful trio away. Barbara began to tremble with relief. Then the old man spoke to her. "Young lady," he said, "I'm sorry I had to order you about, but I didn't want to leave you alone on that train. Did you see the three men sitting across from you?"
"I certainly did. They scared me half to death, particularly the man in the middle, the way he was staring at me."
"I'm a doctor," the old man said. "I, too, noticed something odd about the man in the middle."
"He was drugged or very drunk," Barbara said.
"Perhaps he had been, but not when the other two carried him onto the train. When they carried him on the train, the man in the middle was dead. You were being stared at by a corpse." Really awesome, spooky story from the subways of New York. The man in the middle. So next time you're riding the subway in New York City, especially late at night, just keep that story in mind as you look around at your passengers. Do you see one staring at you all crazy? Just keep asking yourself, is he alive or is he dead? All right, since it's Halloween, I want to not quite end this show yet. I want to tell one of my own personal urban legends. This one actually came from my neighborhood right here in central Alabama in the good old U.S. of A. When the story was told to me, they called it Susan. I'll let you be the judge of whether or not this story is true. No suburban neighborhood exists without an urban legend or two. They flow like sweet honey from the lips of one child to the next as each one tries to outscare his friends. Most of them are fun to listen to, and if you listen closely, you may notice the same identical stories in every neighborhood. Yet each child will swear it happened only in his neighborhood. For instance, there's the famous story about the babysitter and the man upstairs who terrorizes her over the phone without her knowing he is actually hiding inside the house. Next, there are multiple tales of the psychotic hermit who lives in a cabin hidden away in the woods and likes to venture out at night, every once in a while, to kidnap a child from his bed. Then, if the morbid attack on the lonely, elderly people in the neighborhood isn't enough, there's always the belief that the quiet old lady who lives by herself down the street is actually a witch who likes to cook kids and eat them, sans Hansel and Gretel. Our neighborhood had its fair supply of urban legends, much like those I just mentioned. My most favorite that I heard passed around amongst my friends was the story of Susan. Like most urban legends do, it began supposedly with the house just down the street. Back during the early 1980s, Susan Backley lived with her parents in one of the two-story suburban homes in our neighborhood. The 17-year-old attended the local high school, had excellent grades, and was a star athlete on the girls' basketball team. Not only did she possess mental and athletic abilities, but Susan's beauty was very striking, with long, flowing, golden blonde hair and blue eyes, with long lashes that could entrance a teenage boy with one bat of her eyes. Her mother taught at the elementary school, and her father worked for one of the banks in downtown Birmingham. Susan had many friends, but her best friend was Lindy Carter, who played with her on her basketball team. Susan and Lindy knew each other from childhood. They were the same age and did everything together. One Friday night, Susan asked Lindy over to spend the night at her house. Susan's parents were going to go out to dinner and a movie and planned to be out until past midnight, leaving Susan alone in the house. The girls decided this would be an opportune time to have their own little slumber party, to order pizza, watch some scary movies on television, and maybe play a few board games before bed just to lighten the mood.
In Susan's backyard sat a massive trampoline that her friends enjoyed coming over and jumping around on. While Susan's parents got ready for the evening, Susan decided to first take Lindy outside so they could lie around a while on the trampoline, stare up at the sky, and have some girl talk. Tall bushes surrounded the outskirts of the backyard, followed by the woods beyond. As they lay on the trampoline, Lindy suddenly sat straight up and looked in the direction of the bushes. Susan sat up with her. "What is it?" Susan asked. "I don't know. I thought I heard a rustling sound over there. It sounded like something moving around out there." The two girls sat there on the trampoline, watching the bushes and listening. No other sounds were heard, and no movements could be seen. Lindy shrugged. "Guess it was my mind playing with me." The girls continued talking until Mrs. Backley called them into the house to say goodbye. Mr. Backley, always a stickler for security, then checked all the doors and windows to make sure they were locked and secured before leaving the girls for the evening. "Be sure you lock the front door behind us." Susan rolled her eyes at her father's overprotectiveness. Ignoring her, Mr. Backley gave her a light kiss and wished her good night. Susan watched her parents leave and then locked the front door behind them. After ordering the pizzas, Susan decided to take Lindy upstairs while they waited and show off her newest wardrobe addition. It was well known throughout the neighborhood that Susan's favorite color was red velvet. The week before, her mom purchased her a new red velvet house coat and slippers for her birthday. Susan quickly whisked them out of the closet and showed them off to Lindy. "It's so gorgeous and soft. Just feel it." Lindy reached out her hand and stroked the house coat, feeling the soft texture against her fingertips. "It is exquisite, Susan." Later that night, after their pizzas arrived, had long been devoured and they'd grown tired of television, the girls decided to venture on upstairs to Susan's bedroom for the night and play a board game until time for bed. They played for a few hours until neither girl could keep her eyelids raised. "Lindy, I think it's time we hit the hay. In the morning, my mom's making her pancakes. Let's get some sleep so we can get up and eat them while they're hot." Switching out the light, Susan said goodnight to her guest, and they both slipped into her queen-sized bed, Susan on one side and Lindy on the other. Just past midnight, Lindy awakened. She was not sure why at first until she listened to the stillness of the house. A sound from downstairs quickly broke that stillness. Lindy strained her ears to hear it. The quick, soft shriek of metal on metal seemed to sound from the kitchen. Lindy reached over and nudged Susan until she was awake. "Susan, wake up," she said quietly. "What is it?" "Listen, what is that?" They kept their voices just above a whisper as they listened. It did not take long for Susan to also catch the sound. A sound of metal dragging against metal. Susan sat straight up as she recognized it. "That's coming from the kitchen. Sounds like my mom when she sharpens her kitchen knife." Lindy shivered. You think it's your mom?" "It has to be." Susan glanced at the digital clock on her bedstand nearby and noticed the time on the digital clock. "It's after midnight, so my parents are probably back home by now. Maybe mom's getting out her cooking utensils to set out for tomorrow before she goes to bed. She does that sometimes." Lindy continued to shiver. But what if it's not?" "I guess we're just going to have to find out," Susan said as she slid out of bed. She took her house coat from a chair nearby and put it on. Slipping her feet into her slippers, she made her way toward the closed bedroom door. Lindy remained in the bed and pulled the covers up closer around her. "You're really not going down there," she stammered at Susan. I mean, it could be dangerous." "Well, we have to see who it is. Besides, everything is locked up. No one could have broken in without hearing it."
without us hearing it. The sharpening sound suddenly ceased. Both girls listened carefully, but could not hear any other movements from downstairs. Susan shrugged. See, it stopped.
I still say you're crazy. Maybe we should call somebody.
Susan shook her head. Look, why don't we come up with a plan of action? I'm going downstairs just to have a quick look, and then I'll come right back. If I see anything wrong, I'll scream, and that means you better call for help. If you hear me come back up the stairs, then everything is fine and you can let me back in. Very funny, Susan. How would I even know it's you just by the sound of footsteps on the stairs? Susan thought carefully about this. Okay, then. You take my softball bat and hide behind the bedroom door. Stay crouched to the floor and keep the door closed. When you hear footsteps coming back up the stairs, wait until they reach this door. Then crack the door open, reach out, and really fast, touch their feet. If you feel my red velvet slippers or house coat tail, then you'll know it's me. If you don't, hit them in the head with the bat before they get a chance to get you. Susan took her bat from the bedroom closet and handed it over to Lindy. After a moment of hesitation, Lindy finally crawled out of bed and took the bat. She stood and gave Susan a hug. You be careful and remember to shout if anything is out of place. Get back up here really quick. Duh, of course, don't worry, I'll be back in just a few. Susan grabbed a long, pointed nail file from her dresser near the door. Quietly opening the door, she slipped out into the hallway, gave Lindy one last smile, and shut the door back. Lindy hurriedly locked the door behind her and listened as Susan's footsteps trailed away down the stairs just outside. Lindy crouched down beside the door. She waited there in that crouched position as time seemed to pass as quickly as a snail crawling across the floor. No sounds could be heard from downstairs, no matter how hard she strained to hear. Come on, Susan, she thought to herself. Get back up here. After some time crawled past, Lindy finally heard a creak on the bottom stair. One by one, footsteps slowly creaked their way up the stairs. Both excitement and fear coursed through Lindy's body as she listened tightly at the door. Was this Susan coming back? Or was it some maniac with a knife? Perhaps it was Susan's mother coming up to reassure her that everything was fine and to come downstairs for a midnight snack. Maybe Susan was already in the kitchen down there right now, digging into cookies and milk. Maybe. All sorts of scenarios flooded through her mind, and she hoped to heaven above that this would turn out to be one of the positive scenarios. The footsteps reached the top of the stairs, crossed the floor, and stopped just outside the door. Lindy froze. This was it. The time had come for revelation. Knowing she must act as planned, Lindy reached for the doorknob with her right hand, with all the strength she could muster from her trembling body, grasped the knob and turned it, allowing the door to fall open just by a crack. Fighting not to lose her wits, Lindy reached her hand out through the crack slowly through the door. She quickly felt along the floor outside until she felt a red velvet slipper. Joy consumed Lindy's heart as she flung open the door, launched herself out, and still kneeling on the floor, wrapped her arms around Susan's legs and embraced her. Oh, Susan, I was so afraid. I thought you'd never come back. Lindy lifted her eyes up at Susan. It was her standing there, or at least most of her. Everything appeared normal except her head. It had been cut clean off. And there the story ends abruptly each time it's told. I'll go ahead and tell you, if you check the crime records of our community, you'll probably not find any record of this incident. I don't even know anyone named Susan Backley who lived in there in our neighborhood, much less one without a head. So we chalk it up to being an urban legend. But as I said at the beginning of the show, I've always often wondered if there's some grain of truth to these urban legends. After all, they have to start somewhere. So, dear listener, I will leave you with that thought and wish you a happy Halloween 2018. I hope you get lots of candy, enjoy your fun and festivities, and be sure to tune in again next week as I share a few more of my favorite ghastly, ghostly horror stories. Until then, happy hauntings!